Hall of Fame broadcaster Marty Brenneman here, and he's the best storyteller in the game, and it's time to sit back, relax, and have some laughs. Welcome to the Mayor's Office, and here's your host, Sean Casey.
Boom, Chinch! We're back at it, brother!
Yeah, I realize you only have friends who are all-stars.
Dude, I only hang out with all-star friends, bro, okay? That's a, you, all, my all-star friends and you are the only people I hang out with, so that's a good thing, dude. Listen, this is going to be a good one today. You know, it's funny. We always talk about this, and I think we say it every week. You know, whenever you bring your buddies in on these shows, you actually have to research them. And when you start to research them, you go, holy shit, these guys are pretty good players. You know what I mean? You don't know them exactly as players. You know them more as like teammates and friends. But this guy, how about this? 16 years in the show, 200 wins, 117 losses. That's legit right there, okay? Over 600 winning percentage, 3.66 career ERA with almost 2,500 strikeouts, 5-time All-Star, 3 times World Series champ, right? NLCS MVP 2016, NL wins leader 2018, threw a no-hitter that I was part of May 19, 2008, Hutch Award winner, which I didn't know, so was I. This guy doesn't know I'm the Hutch Award winner 1999, baby, let's go. One of the best postseason pitchers in the history of the game. Right, opening pitched the opening game of the playoff series 12 times. That means you're reliable and you're a badass, right?
Yeah,
yep. He's probably being so uncomfortable that I'm saying all this stuff because I know Johnny's like the most humble guy ever, but I'm going to keep going because I got a couple more. 30 or more starts 12 times. One of 9 lefties with 200 wins, 600 winning percentage, and a career ERA under 4. 6 are in the Hall of Fame, and the 7th one is CeCe Sabathia. So, nice. Dude. I'm going to bring him in because he's probably having a heart attack right now. He has too many accolades. Let's bring in my man, Johnny Lester. Johnny, what's up, brother?
What up, fellas? How we doing?
Good, man. Did you know you were that good, Johnny?
No. Oh, man.
Oh, man. Of course you did. One day, tell your kids, you know, I know my, do your kids remember you at all playing? Like, does Hudson remember at all? Or
he does. You know, and Walker does too, to a certain degree. But yeah, man, I mean, I'm sure you know the feeling like when they tell you that their favorite player is a guy in your, you know, another guy in your clubhouse or another guy right. across the way. It's really bad when they say it's somebody across the way that you can't stand. That's the one that I was like, no, he can't, you know, you're not allowed to root for him. No,
no, you don't like him. You don't like him.
But no, man, it I think HUD remembers a lot more of Boston. You know, and then obviously Chicago is so fresh in his mind, but Walker only remembers Chicago and Cy, you know, really doesn't know much. I mean, she's just happy that I'm home more than anything.
Right, know? Dude. Yeah. So. Yeah. How's that been, brother? I mean, 16 years, obviously on the road. I know exactly. I feel like I walked away too, because my kids were 6, 5, and 1 at the time when I left Boston in 08 was my last year. But I just remember the grind of the years that, you know, towards the end. I think when you're younger, you're like, let's go, let's go, let's go. But as you get older, you know, how is it being home? Are you enjoying it? And also, why did you retire, brother? Because you still had 28 starts last year. You were still putting up some numbers.
I mean, I think, you know, as you know, man, it gets harder to leave, you know, and then, you know, their schedule starts becoming more important than your schedule, and which is how it should be, you know, like as your kids get older, they need to start being kids. And, you know, we had held off so long from letting them play sports because we knew, well our big thing, just talking about it, is if you're going to play, you're going to be there. You're not going to be, you know, in Chicago for a month and miss all of your guys' practices and then show up and expect to play. Like, that's not the way, you know, you commit to these, to not only play, but you commit to your teammates too, to be there. So, you know, that became harder. I didn't see him as much, you know, you're in that hotel room or whatever by yourself a lot longer. And, it gets hard, man. So that was part of the decision, you know, the preparation got harder. You know, I didn't have, you know, thank God I didn't have anything major I ever really had to deal with, you know, through my career, but just those little things became bigger. You know, I couldn't work out like I wanted to, you know, which then it makes you kind of feel like in the back of your mind, am I doing everything I can to be ready every 5 days for these guys? And, you know, the game is changing. It's younger, it's faster, it's harder. You know, and I, my big thing that I always talked about was I wanted to be able to hand my jersey over. I didn't want somebody to take that from me and tell me that, you know, I couldn't do this, or, you know, have to prove myself to make a team in spring training and, you know, all that stuff. So there was just a lot of things. Like, I wanted it to be my decision, not somebody else's. I think that's a big thing that really kind of hung over my head. And it was just time, man. I mean, it's been fun. It was awesome. And it's actually been, you know, really good so far for me. Yeah. You know, I've had little moments here and there that I'm sure my wife would tell you where she's like, hey, you need to go, you know, do something, get out of the house for a minute. But other than that, man, it's been good.
You know, one of the things for me, Johnny, was like, for all those years, you have such a routine, even in the off season, you know, like, okay, I'm going to wake up at this time. I'm going to go work out. I'm going to eat lunch and blah, blah, in the off season. Then you get to the season. You're like, okay, spring training starts. Here's my schedule, you know? And then all of a sudden, you know, I know for me, this is my experience. I remember one day I called, you know, I don't even know who the hell I called. Nobody. I'm like, I'm retiring. You know what I mean? But I remember it came across the ESPN ticker and it said, Sean Casey retires. And I remember standing in my living room, looking around going, the hell do I do now? Like, I'm like, and it was more like, what's my routine now? Like, what's the routine? Are you finding that a little bit? Like, man, like, what do I do with my days?
Well, I think when the kids get out of school and now that baseball is done for them, I think that'll change. You know, I still have the routine of, you know, getting into school. We got stuff we got to do during the day, pick them up from school, homework, practice, games, whatever it needs to be. So I have that structure that you're talking about right now.
Right.
You know, I think when they get out of school and, you know, when it gets hotter down here where I won't be able to go to the farm as much just because there's not as much to do or whatever, that might get a little harder. But I've been so wrapped up with, you know, driving these kids around and making sure that they get to their stuff and trying to be a part of that, that I really haven't. I mean, I think I've maybe watched a total of like 18 innings of baseball since I've been home, you know? So I miss the camaraderie side of it, but I've been able to get that in certain areas. I played in a golf tournament in Dallas and got to see, you know, the Becketts, the Millars, the McCanns, and we got to have our dinners and, you know, kind of have that stuff that you miss. So that kind of held me over for a little bit. I think when summer comes, it might get a little weird, but we've had a good run so far. So I hope that continues.
What about you, Johnny, with your kids? You know, you got Hudson, I believe, is 12, Walker's 9. Is that, do I have that right?
Well, close. Well, Hudson will be 12 at the end of July, and then Walker will be 9 at the end of September.
Okay, and then you have Sai, too, obviously, is your daughter. So, like, what about you now as a dad, brother? Like, now you get a chance to kind of be with them when they're playing or playing sports. You know, like, what advice do you have for them as a dad now that you're there all the time?
Well, it's funny because I try not to be the baseball dad. You know, like, I try to be just dad. Like, I want him to know, you know, well, I've told him, I said, man, I really don't care what you do. I don't care if you strike out every at bat. Like, I don't, that's not what makes me proud of you. What I care more about, and we had this conversation about halfway through the season, is your hustle and your attitude. I'm like, if you stop hustling, that's going to make me more upset than you striking out every time, or making an error in the field or whatever. Like, you give good effort, you cheer your teammates on. That's all I care about. So that's what I've been trying to instill into them. You know, obviously, I know I wasn't a hitter. So anytime I talk to my kids about hitting, they look at me like I got three heads. You know,
they're like, "Hey, you went deep a couple of times in the show, though, bro."
Yeah, I mean, they did see that, but you know what I mean. So I've been trying to like outsource that, kind of push them. You know, if Hudson started to ask questions about pitching, it's kind of interested him a little bit, and then Walker will play kid pitch next year. So they've asked questions, you know, and all that, but. Like I said, man, I'm just trying to be dad, just trying to to play catch in the backyard, you know, throw batting practice when I need to and, you know, all that stuff. So all the other stuff I think will kind of fall into line as they get a little older and kind of figure it out.
Takes care of itself. Well, dude, I want to rewind a little bit, brother, because I got a chance to know your parents a little bit and I know you come from great stock. You know what I mean? Like just – just the way you carried yourself, Johnny, the teammate that you were to everybody and throughout your whole career, like how accountable you were. I mean, it's even looking at your numbers and the starts, and you even talking about it now, you know, being accountable to those, to your teammates. Can you talk a little bit about your upbringing? Like, what was it like growing up in the Lester household? You know, your dad was a police officer. Your mom worked, you know, for the roads for Pierce County, like doing some stuff, some hard labor stuff. I met your mom at your wedding. I was like, damn. I was like, she's the most jacked person here. I was like, I think she'd kill anybody. If anybody crossed anybody, you'd have Mrs. Lester dominating people. So what was it like growing up in your house, man, with two hardworking, you know, parents?
I think you said it, man. I mean, I don't want to say it was hard, because I mean, they, I don't want to say gave me everything that I needed to do what I did as a kid and end up turning into a baseball player. But you know, they provided me with every opportunity to succeed. You know, I think the big thing that my dad and my mom always tried to make sure is I was accountable. Like, I was accountable for being at the practices, being at the games, my schoolwork, and just as a human being, you know, like you have to treat everybody with respect. And, you know, until they break that, you know, you treat everybody with respect. And that's something my dad always talked about. You know, they were hard on me. They made me work hard. You know, I mean, I'm sure I had the same talks with my dad after games that a lot of guys did, as far as, you know, effort and attitude and not yelling at the umpires, which really didn't work out too well later. that talk never stuck with me very long. But no, I mean, I think that's the biggest thing, man. It's just being accountable. And I always tried to be accountable for each day that I was at the field. You know, pitching is so unique compared to hitting, because, you know, you guys get to do it every day. You know, there's people see the work that gets put into it. Whereas, you know, when we throw our bullpens, nobody's there. You know, nobody wants to pay admission to go watch a bullpen. You know, they're watching batting practice. You know? So, yeah. You know, people have to assume that you're doing your work, and, you know, I tried to be, you know, accountable for that. And that's definitely something that my parents instilled in me, is the work ethic and all that stuff. So, you know, they definitely made me, you know, not only who I am as a person, but as a baseball player, for sure.
What about the, like, I always say, like, you know, attraction, not promotion sometimes, like, as far as, like, man, you know, when you watch, I remember my dad started his own company in high school, and I just remember the hours of grinding. I was like, God, this guy is still, the lights are still on downstairs. You know, he's still, you know, working his ass off. Your mom doing what she did that, you know, was that kind of one of the things where you watch them, man, I can't believe my mom's doing, you know, the hard labor that she does.
Yeah. And I think I really didn't see it until I got older and appreciated it. You know, like when you're a kid, you just, my dad does this, my mom does that. You know what I mean? Like, you don't really understand. And kind of the same thing with where my kids are with baseball. You know, you don't really understand until you get older and appreciate what was there. But yeah, I mean, to look back, you know, as I got older, I appreciated what she did, and I tried to, you know, hey, mom, you need to move on from this. Like, I understand you want to get your 30 years, you want to get your retirement and all this stuff, but I mean, you're getting beat up, you know, like, this is tough. And she's like, no, I'm not letting them win. And, you know, just that work ethic and, you know, going to work every day, no matter how she felt. And same thing with my dad. You know, my dad did the same thing for however long, you know, the military and then the police force, and, you know, seeing them get up every single day, take me to school and go put in however many hours they put in, and then be able to come home, feed me, and take me to three different practices, you know, and two different games, and do that and never complained and did it. And, you know, that just, you know, that really sticks with me. And I, you know, obviously I'm very grateful for everything and, you know, afforded me the opportunity to be a kid and get to play a bunch of sports and, get to do a lot of awesome things. And, yeah, man, I mean, I think looking back on it, you know, you wish as a kid you could appreciate it a little bit more, but
right,
you know, as an adult, you definitely appreciate everything your parents do for you.
Who was the biggest influence in your life outside of your parents?
Man, a lot of, like, when you leave at 18, you know, I'm sure this goes for, you know, guys that go into the military and, you know, other guys that are people in general that take jobs where they got to travel at a young age and kind of figure things out. You know, it took to a lot of coaches, you know. I was very fortunate to get, I know you know how it is, man, in the minor leagues, these coaches can have one or two agendas, either to make you better or to try to put their name next to your name in case you make it, you know,
like, yes.
I want to thank these three coaches and then hopefully they get a promotion off of those guys, you know. So I was very fortunate to meet a lot of great guys. Ralph Truel was one of them, that at an early age really helped me hone a lot of things with my craft. And then, you know, through the minor leagues, some other guys. But, you know, I think too, like at the time of my life and then the stuff I went through, you know, Tito was a big part of that, you know, with my cancer stuff and getting back to the big leagues and understanding the business and the human side of the game. You know, I always felt like they had my best interest at heart when they made decisions. And that's hard to believe in a business like that. You know, it's hard to, but Tito always did that. And I think he was a big one. And then, you know, John Farrell at an early age for me too, you know, right when I get into the big leagues, you know, kind of really helping me hone my skills and, you know, kind of being there for me, being a young guy and on a veteran team and listening to me gripe about, all the old guys treat me like shit, and you know, I had to take beers on the plane and sing and all this other stuff. But you know, everybody does it. You just feel like you're the only one doing it at the time. And you know, he listened to all that, and so yeah. I mean, I was very fortunate, man. I got to have a lot of good mentors along the way.
Yeah, dude, what a great organization you were drafted by to have the guys that they built that minor league system on. You know, obviously, you know, you're very fortunate there. You know, I think some of the things you're talking about, I know for me, I came out of college and I always look back and go, if I came out of high school, this industry would have ate me up and spit me out a year or two. Like, I just felt like I, at 18, I don't know if I was mature enough to go play minor league baseball and leave home. Like, mentally, as an 18-year-old kid now playing baseball, you know, for money, and you got $1 million signing bonus, all this stuff. But mentally, you know, when did it start to click for you? Like, okay, I got to get a routine. I got to figure this out. Like, how did you not just go to the minor leagues and be like, oh man, this is too hard?
Well, I mean, I think I don't, just from what people have told me about college, I think kind of college and minor leagues are very similar, right? You have all these distractions outside of the game. You know, you have all these decisions that you can make to help or derail you in your life, right? Like, and I think that's just everyday life decisions as it is. You know, I think the big thing with it is just becoming comfortable. Being comfortable, which I was an only child, so I was comfortable alone. You know what I mean? Like, I was comfortable entertaining myself and making sure that I was okay. And so I think that helped, but it hindered me a little bit. But man, I was so lucky with the guys that I got drafted with that class. We spent 6 weeks together in Instructs down at Fort Myers. And so, you know, you have all these other 19-year-old kids that are all together learning how to do this for the first time. And some of them are still friends of mine to this day. And, you know, you kind of go with them and you try to go down that right path of still having fun. Like, it's still fun, but okay, this is my job now. And I think that's how I tried to look at it. Kind of what goes back to my parents, you know, like, hey, this is your job. Like, you have to work at your job and become good at it. And like I said, man, I was fortunate where the way my mind works, I'm so routine oriented where it was, hey, I got to be at the field. I do this when I'm at the field. When I'm off the field, I go eat and I come back and I go to bed, you know, like, so it was just kind of like at an early age of doing that over and over and over again. And just trying to, man, just trying to survive really. I mean, I didn't have, you know, I was very, I keep saying it, but I was lucky that I got the signing bonus that I did where I didn't necessarily have to worry about making $800 a month. Right. You know, like, I could afford my apartment, afford my phone bill, afford the things that I needed to be comfortable. You know, we're seeing some of these other guys that are struggling. I mean, they're using that $800 a month for everything that it's worth just to survive to the next month. So, you know, I think that would mentally have drained me a little bit if I didn't have that security blanket. But you know, I think that's a big part of it, man. Is just having that financial stability too, where you're able to to do your work, but enjoy your life as well.
Yeah. Did any of those guys, you talked about that class you were drafted with and how close you was, any other guys in that class make the big leagues?
A few. Brandon Moss was one.
Oh yeah, Moss, he's the best.
Yeah. I'm trying to think who else was in there. Charlie, I don't know if he was a 02 draft, but we were all kind of together. Guys that like I played with that at an early age that helped me. Kaysen Gabbard was one. He got to the big leagues a little bit. Daniel Murphy.
Yeah, Daniel Murphy. Or wow.
David Murphy.
Yeah, David still Murphy. Good player. Played with Texas for a while.
Yep. He was in that trade for Gagne in
08.
And he played a while in the big leagues. He was with me there. Pedroia was an 03 draft, but we all went up together. Handler and Mary.
Dude, how was Petey as a minor league teammate?
Oh, dude. So we're in the Florida State League grinding, sweating our you-know-what's off. And
balls off, yeah.
Yeah, this guy shows up. He's, you know, the second-round pick. He's 5 foot nothing. Shows up. We're in the middle of the season. I mean, we've been grinding all year. And he gets into the clubhouse. He'll introduce himself. And literally, like, 2 days later, he's like, I'm just going to let you guys know. It's going to be a short stint for me. I'll be in the big leagues by the end of this year. And I don't know why they sent me to A-ball. You know, like, you guys are garbage. I should be playing, you know, double-A, at least double-A, playing shortstop. We had Hanley Ramirez, who was the number one prospect in the world at shortstop. And he's like, yeah, I should be playing shortstop. You know, I hit rockets. I don't know why I'm here. I was just like, bro, this is a special human being. Oh, Papelbon. Papelbon was another one.
Pap was on those teams too.
Yeah, Manny Del Carmen.
Yes.
So not necessarily the same draft, but we all kind of came up together, played, you know, I played with Manny from 03 till he got to the, well, and then in the big league. Same thing with Pedroia, played with him the whole way up, Papelbon the whole way up when Pap was a starter. You know, so like I had a group of guys that we had success together,
yeah,
you know, and moved along together. And I think that's, you know, another way to help guys, you know, get to the next level and succeed. You've got comfort. You're not just the only guy there, you know, amongst other people that, you know, you're trying to be friends with.
So with that group of guys, you know, I know one of the most special things is, you know, when you get the call that you're coming up to the show, what was the call like for you?
So like in 06, when I got called up for the first time, it was weird because not all those guys were there. And I was on a very veteran AAA team and was really, they, you know, babied me and I had a ton of pitch count and all that stuff. So Pedroia was there, but all the, like Pap and Manny were already up in the big league. So I didn't have that, but I remember, Ron Johnson, who was our AAA coach.
Oh, the best.
Yeah. Called me in and, you know, in typical Ron Johnson fashion, told me I was going to the big leagues with dip falling out of his mouth. And he's like, well, kid, you're going up, have fun. You know, like one of those. And there, you know, it was awesome.
So you were in Pawtucket.
I was in Pawtucket. So it was easy. Like I went up there. The better part of the story is how naive I was to the situation where I get called up and I pitch it was supposed to be the first game of a doubleheader and it only ended up being one game, but you know, it's a Saturday and the team's leaving on Sunday to go to Minnesota and then Atlanta for a road trip. And so I literally, I'm walking in to do my interview after the game, went 4+ or 5, gave up 5, got a no decision. And here comes Tito. And I'm like, hey, Skip, you know, I don't know how to ask this, but, you know, my apartment's in Pawtucket. Do I need to, like, go pack? Because if so, I got to drive back tonight and, you know, be back to the hotel tonight so I can get up and be on time for the game tomorrow. And he's like, looks at me and he's like, yeah, go get your shit. What are you doing? Like, nobody told you? I was like, no, I thought I was just pitching one game. He's like, no, get your shit and let's go. So I was like, all right. So
you're actually part of the team. You're actually part of the team.
Yeah, yeah. Next thing you know, I'm on a show plane to Minnesota with the team and then watched Johan Santana punch out 16 on Monday night in the Metrodome. And I was like, oh, God. This is how it is? This is what I got to do?
So that changeup was freaking dirty.
Oh man, I sat next to Alex Cora, and he called every pitch because you know Alex was the best at picking up the
oh yeah, the best.
That. He's like, all right, here comes his changeup, fastball, the whole game, and punched out 16. It was unbelievable.
Even you know it's coming, you can't hit it. When somebody's on the mound, even when you know it's coming, it's big league pitching. You ain't hitting it. You know.
Yeah, it was impressive.
I remember Jim Leland came in 2000. We were with I think Johan was with the Twins at the time. He came into our hitters meeting and he's like, and we were back and forth with them when I was with the Tigers with 1 and 2. And so we were coming down the stretch and comes in the hitters meeting. He's like, men, just know that you're going to look like a 3-year-old a couple times tonight out there. He goes, that changeup's going to embarrass you tonight. You're going to be embarrassed 1 to 2 pitches in a bat. Yep. You just got to keep grinding. He's like, you just got to keep going. You can't worry about the crowd and what everyone's booing you because you look like an asshole. He's like, just stay with it. This guy will give you. And it was just so funny. I remember thinking, wow, you got Leland coming in here telling us that Santana is going to make us look. And he does. Yep. Then you go out there and your first at bat, you swing and miss so far on your front leg. The ball, Bugs Bunny, you've swung and missed by 20 feet, and you look around like, that's embarrassing. And he's like, see, I told you.
Yeah, man. He was something special for a while there. I mean, actually for a long time.
He was impressive. No, he was. So, Johnny, for you, you come up in 2006. You have some success. And then at the end of that season, I believe it's coming into spring training, or you talked about it earlier, but you get diagnosed with lymphoma, right? All of a sudden, can you take us back to that time and you know when you know what you were thinking when all this has happened to you?
Well, it was the end of 06, and you know I had all these symptoms that I didn't know were symptoms at the time. You know, looking back on it, I lost some weight, and I was just like, well, maybe it's just being the big league stress, whatever. Right. You know, I couldn't eat enough food. Like it was, my metabolism was going through the roof on that. I was having some back pain, which ended up being because of one of my enlarged lymph nodes was putting pressure against anyway. But yeah, at the end of 06, found that out and, you know, went home. Well, I did one treatment at Dana-Farber in Boston and then went home to Fred Hutch and did the remaining of my treatment. And by, I want to say it was the middle of December, I found out I'd gotten through four treatments, I'd gotten my scan and was cancer free. Wow. Finished that, did two more treatments. And then, you know, my hard headed self, I was at spring training on February 1st, ready to, you know, like thinking that I was going to make the team out of spring weighing, you know, 185 pounds I know I got no hair now, but I had no eyebrows. Like there was no hair growing on this
no body hair.
At all. Yeah. Like, I looked bad. You know, so it to go back to what you're talking about, the organization, the first class organization, the way they treated or helped me get through all that. And then the process coming back of, like I said, me being hard headed, thinking I was going to make that team. And Tito and John Farrell and you know, even John Henry and all the other guys, Theo, that were involved with it, you know, really helped me slow down enough to where I didn't hurt myself. That I think that's where ultimately would have gone is I wasn't ready to do what I needed to do to perform and succeed at that level. And so, you know, they handled it so well. And then through that, I got to meet, you know, the positive of the negative. If I got to meet a lot of great people through that whole experience.
Yeah. John, I had stage 4 melanoma cancer when I was 26 years old. I remember being like, I'm 26 years old. I'm in the best shape I've ever been in my life. You were what, 22 at the time? Yeah. And you were a world-class athlete at that time. And you're trying to become a great professional athlete. Were you more afraid, or did you go hardcore into attack mode going, fuck this, not me. I'm, you know, this doesn't fit who I am and what I want to do.
So the story behind that is I was in because of my back pain. So I had gotten the full story. I got into an accident driving to the game. I was pitching that night against the Yankees and I got rear ended Next day, woke up, had this really bad back pain. Thought it was just because of the accident and never went away. Found out through that that I had the lymphoma. And so I'm sitting in the hospital bed in Mass General. And the weird part about lymphoma is it's a blood cancer, right? So your blood, your white and red blood cells are supposed to be, you know, bouncing all over the place. Well, mine weren't really doing that. And that's where we ended up in the hospital bed with our team doctor, the infectious disease guy, which is kind of, I think, a little more scary than the oncologist standing next to him, you know? So I'm like, Jesus, I got some weird, you know, like, I don't know, weird disease from somewhere we don't know, like what's going on. And, so they did an autopsy, or not autopsy, a,
biopsy.
There we go. Thanks, Case. No problem. They did that and found out. So the oncologist comes back in. And so my parents had gone and gotten some food, and I was like, well, you're here, so I know what it is. And he's like, well, you know, do you want me to wait for your parents? I was like, no, like, let's go. Let's talk about this. And he, through that conversation, basically told me, he's like, hey, listen, if somebody held a gun to your head and said, you have to pick a cancer that we're going to put in your body right now, he's like, this is the cancer you would want.
Wow.
And that's, you know, 17 years ago, and they were at like a 98% cure rate then, you know? So that's all I heard. And for the longest time, I told people, I said, I didn't even know what, I couldn't have told you the actual name of what cancer I had for probably 6-7 years after the fact, because I didn't want to know it. I didn't care. All I heard was that. And so then it was like, all right, what do we need to do? How fast do we need to do it? And let's just get, because now all I'm thinking about is next season.
All right.
You know, like, am I going to be, you know, the hard headed once again of don't actually accept what the hell's going on. And I'm starting to think, well, okay, if I need 6 treatments at the minimum, that puts me at this date. If we start at this date, which then gives me a month for, you know, like this stupid stuff. But to answer your question, yeah, I mean, once I heard that, it was, let's go, let's do this. Let's figure it out. And the shitty part about cancer, right, is you put all these drugs into your body that don't make you feel any better.
Right. They make you feel sick. That's the weirdest thing, is like you start feeling sickness that you never know you could even feel.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like the way I describe people, it's not like you have the flu and you get some Theraflu and you feel better in 2 or 3 days. Like this is, you know, 3 months of feeling like dog shit, you know, like you feel terrible. And you have to believe that these drugs are working. You know, until you go back for that scan of, okay, well, hopefully this worked, you know? And so that's, I think, the really hard part. And that's where cancer messes with you mentally, because you feel worse to feel better, hopefully at the end. And, you just have to keep that positive, man. Like you gotta be positive through the whole process. It's so hard to do. But you gotta try to be there as best you can.
Dude, well, first off, talk about a positive, having a negative turn into a positive. You and Farrah are you have a cancer foundation, right? You've given a lot back to kids with cancer and all that stuff. Can you just talk about that a little bit, Johnny? Like, you know, it's kind of become a big part of your life's work.
Well, it's not only, you know, the foundation has become a big part of us, but like kind of the slogan of the whole thing has become, I guess, like a rallying cry, not only for cancer patients, but for myself and just life. So we started a foundation back in like 2011, I believe is the year we did it, called Never Quit, NVRQT. And we wanted to, you know, I think having the experience I did, I wasn't necessarily a kid, but I was a younger adult. And with that, you know, kids kind of get with the treatment, with the research and development of drugs and so forth, kids kind of get left behind in that pool there. So we found that out, and we decided that that's the route we wanted to go. We wanted to get more research going, because if we don't have research, we don't have cures. And so, through that whole thing, same thing, man, got to meet a lot of awesome people doing this, a lot of awesome kids. One of the best things that we came up with this whole thing was, instead of seeing, which I have to preface, I hate hospitals. I hate hospitals when I was in them. I hate hospitals having to go to them. So we wanted to bring the kids to us, and what better avenue to do than have them come to batting practice. So what we would try to do is, in all these visiting teams, visiting cities, which by 2019, thank goodness we did it before, you know, all the COVID stuff, we got all 30 ballparks where we had kids come out and be a part of, you know, a game for a day. So they got to come to batting practice. You know, most of them didn't care about me. They wanted to meet the visiting guy or the home team guy. So we, through connections, through people, we would always have one home team guy come over and say hello during their batting practice. And then we would come out there and do our thing. So it was awesome to be a part of. And then we got to do a Never Quit night, which was unbelievable to have people tell stories and get together and raise money for these kids. And hopefully, you know, what we would try to tell people is, even if you give a dollar, that $1 could potentially fund some sort of research that then comes up for a cure for some form of childhood cancer. So, yeah. You know, like I said, man, through negative stuff, we got to do a lot of positive and meet a lot of awesome people and a lot of awesome kids. And it's hopefully we're trying to figure out a way now that we can continue to do something with this and still kind of keep it out there.
Where could our, is there a place to donate, Johnny? Is there, where could our listeners donate if we want to?
The website we have, we're on Facebook. So that's one way of doing it. And I am not the most technically savage person in the world. Okay. So
obviously.
Yeah. So you're gonna have to forgive me on that one, but yeah, we have nvrqt.org is our website. And then, through that, which was really cool, what we did too. And obviously with the COVID stuff, it got a little harder, but, we had Never Quit baseballs that I would sign. And if somebody made a donation, you could send that baseball to somebody, whether it be, you know, a child that's actually going through it or just a friend or whatever. So, we've got some cool stuff on there, some cool ideas, and hopefully, you know, we can continue to put up some money for this. Oh,
that's awesome, man. That's awesome. One of the stories that I don't know if everyone knows this, but I was there when it happened, was Anthony Rizzo, who obviously became one of your, you know, big time teammates, is a great friend of yours when you guys were with the Cubs, but he came up with the Red Sox. And I remember in 2008, when I believe he came to the clubhouse because he was going through some cancer stuff too. Yep. And he wanted to meet you.
Yeah.
Right. You're the guy he wanted to meet because he, you know, obviously it's a scary time for him. It was a scary time for you. Can you talk about that a little bit? Like meeting Riz for the first time when he was I think he was an A-ball player in the minor leagues for the Red Sox. But I remember you having this conversation with him in Boston.
Yeah, and he, you know, if you get to talk to him, he'll still take credit for the no-hitter. I met with him like 3 days before I threw my no-hitter. So he's like, he keeps telling me, he's like, you're welcome for that, by the way.
That's so great, typical Riz.
But no, man, it was, you know, kind of crazy how life comes full circle, right? Like you meet this A-ball kid who's got, you know, luckily at this, when I got diagnosed with mine, I was in the big leagues. I had big league insurance. I had big league help. I had all these people around me to help, right? Where Riz is an A-ball and, you know, I'm sure those bills weren't cheap and hopefully, you know, all that anyway. But, you know, I think the biggest thing from not only getting to talk to Riz and him listening to me, but it was his parents. I think more so benefited from that conversation than Riz. You know, just going back to like when my parents went through it, they benefited a lot more from conversations than I did. And so it was a really cool experience to get to meet him. And then I want to say I didn't see him again until 2014. And I don't know what All-Star game it was for him, but it was All-Star game in Minneapolis, and I ran into him, and he came up and gave me a big hug. And, you know, it was kind of the beginning of that move to Chicago, I guess, more or less. But no, man, like just a connection that, you know, I always have with him. And, you know, looking back, I'm obviously more proud of what he does off the field with his foundation and, you know, kind of the man he's become and all that stuff. I got to see it kind of firsthand, him grow up and do all that. And so it's, he's an awesome, awesome human being, a good friend. And like I said, man, it's just crazy how things happen for a reason. Right. And you get, you know, kind of intertwined in your life. So
yeah, that's a crazy story, man. That is so cool. And you guys are both doing unbelievable things, you know, with cancer research and development and stuff. So you come back in 2007, the middle of the year. I think like it's great that Theo and those guys kind of pulled the reins back on you, because I know you were looking to go full steam ahead.
Yeah.
But you get back to the big leagues. You have some success. I kind of want to fast forward a little bit in this, because you guys win the World Series in 2007, but you pitch Game 4, right, in Colorado. Yeah. You pitched the clinching game. What was that like for you, man? Like, when you before that first pitch of Game 4, when you're on the mound and you're like, wow, you know, what was going through your head?
Oh, bro, I was a nervous wreck. I mean, I didn't sleep. You know, you wake up and you go get breakfast, and you know, you're trying to just be normal, right? Like, you're trying not to think about the magnitude of what's about to go down, you know, like that's, I think, a big thing that you have to try to do is kind of downplay everything. And I just remember like sitting in the hotel room, and I had kind of the nerve, like the shakes, like you were cold, you know, like you just, I couldn't stop. I'm like, what the hell is wrong with me? And so like, I remember that. And then, you know what, man, like I remember, cause I walked to the field that day, because we stayed at the real close hotel, yeah, you know, across the way from the field. So I walked over there, and I just remember walking in the door and seeing, this is when you know, you're young and you don't have to get there 5 hours for the game to get loose. Like, you can just show up right, and pitch, you know, like,
right.
Yeah. Hey, give me a couple shoulder rolls.
Yeah. A couple shoulder rolls. Like, I'm ready.
Yeah. What's rolling out? I don't need to roll out. What are you talking about? Stretching? What's that?
Cold tub, hot tub? I don't need those.
So they tell you, like, you can't show up later or earlier than 2 hours or later than 2 hours before the game. You have to be there before 2 hours before the game. Like, that's the bare minimum. And right. So I would walk in there 2 hours before the game. 7:10, I was there at 5:10. Like, here we go, guys. I'm ready. Yeah, I walked in, and I just remember seeing the guys, and like, kind of a calmness came over me. Because I think just being there, now you're back to that routine of what you need to do to get ready, right? And so now, yeah, I kind of fell into that. And then I kind of, you know, more or less, you kind of black out, you know, like you kind of, it's all like out of body stuff, right? One of the coolest things. So we're pitching, and Tulo comes up his first at bat, and they start doing that Tulo chant, you know, the Tulo, the whole crowd, 1,000 people. And I'm like, this is awesome. Like, right. Like, I'm supposed to be trying to get this guy out. I'm like, this is awesome. This is the coolest thing I've ever heard. And so I like,
oh my God,
I think that's the stuff I remember more so than, you know, more so than anything.
Were you like, no, get man, back? You like, focus. I got Tula whiskey chain going on. Yeah. It's unbelievable.
I'm like, if I don't get this guy, I got Matt Holliday, who looks like he's going to kill everybody if you look at him wrong. But no, man, like, I just remember that, you know, I remember like stupid stuff about the game. I remember throwing a heater down away to Todd Helton, and he grunted like he was lifting 600 pounds, an absolute rocket to Manny and left. And I was like, oh God, don't throw that pitch again.
Don't throw that pitch again. Yeah. Slider next time. Slider.
Yeah. Like, I mean, just stupid stuff about the game. Right. Like, just little things here and there about it, but you know, like, not really understanding the magnitude after it happened, of what, you know, just kind of transpired on that whole deal. Yeah. You know, I really don't think it sinks in until opening day of the next year, right? When you finally get something for it. It's not like Little League, you take your trophy home with you, you know, like you got to give that trophy to the owner, and he gets to take it home for however long. Like, you sit there for 5 months waiting on your prize kind of. But yeah, man, I mean, I tell people too, man, about that game, like, you know, Josh Beckett was the best pitcher on the planet that year. I know he finished second in the Cy Young to CC, but he playoffs, I mean, he was unhittable, and he was going game five, you know? So it was like, I didn't want to screw it up. The biggest thing I tell people is, I go, the worst thing that could have ever happened is me go two innings and our bullpen is screwed for the next game. Right. Like, I was fortunate enough to get to six, into the sixth, and kind of hand it over from there. But Josh is going game five, and, you know, up 3-1, you know, if we lose that game. So that kind of helped, you know, ease my mind a little bit behind that. So, but yeah, man, I mean, just nervous wreck before you even get there. Crazy.
I want to stay right there with Beckett, because I know Beckett was a big part of your, I think he was a big part of your routine, a big part of kind of the pitcher you became. Like, what you know, what did Josh mean to you and your development as a pitcher?
Well, I mean, I'm sure he hated it when it happened, because Tito called me and him into the office in spring training, and I think it was 06. And, you know, he was like, Josh, you're probably not going to like this, but John, you follow him around, whatever he does, you do. And so, like, I was a puppy dog from then on out. Like, dude, we played long toss together. We ran together. We lifted together. I mean, everything. And he, like you said, him and then the next year in 07, when we got John Farrell, we're like really, really big. Another name, Donnie Cox team, the sports.
Oh, Donnie's the best. DK's the best.
Yeah.
So like have a sports psychologist on the bench with you. I come back after times like, Donnie, I don't know what the hell I'm doing out here. Can you help me out? My anxiety's off the charts. He's like, breathe, box breathe.
Yeah, man. I mean, but like having what better resources do you have right there? You know, as a 22 year old kid. You know, you got Josh Beckett, MVP of the World Series. You got John Farrell, who ended up, you know, really helping me. Tito and Donnie Coxstein, all like my disposal. Jeez. Of buying into helping me succeed, right? Like, so you have those guys, and those three guys really helped, you know, implement the daily structure of what I did to prepare for a start. And to be able to do it at a younger age, too, you're not set in any ways. Right. Like you're a blank sheet of paper, you know, like here, tell me what I need to do, you know? Right. And, to those guys' credit, man, they were honest with me at all times. Donnie helped me with the number grid that I still did to my last start.
What was that? I remember this. What was that? The number grid.
So the big thing with it is the point behind it is to try to take each individual pitch as an event, right? So you have a number grid on a 3x5 card, and all the numbers, it goes 0, 0 to 99, and they're all jumbled up. So you have a minute. So the way I did it was I had 3 minutes of cards, and you know, one was up by two, one was down by three, one was up by one, starting at, you know, different numbers. And then for the fourth and fifth minute, you had distractions in the background doing the same thing. And so one was like cars honking, basically like being in New York, somebody yelling, cars honking, trains going by, planes flying by. And then the fifth minute was, you had music in the background. And so it's a hard game, because if you're looking for, let's just say the number two, and you're going by two, and you see four over here in the corner, you can't pay attention to four. Like, you're not looking for, you got, so I'm not looking for my 0-1 pitch. I'm looking for my 0-0 pitch. Yeah. I gotta start on 0-0. What am I doing here? I'm not worried about 0-1 until I get there. So like it tries to help you along those, you know, along that route of what am I trying to do right now? What am I trying to find? What am I trying to throw? Okay. I executed. I found two. Now where do I go? Now where's four? And obviously we're humans and we're all going to see four over here in the corner, so you cheat a little bit. But the idea behind it is to focus on the task at hand. So I started doing those with Donnie in 08. I think we started it in spring training, and we would do a card and we talk about something. We talk about the game before, we talk about the next game coming up. You know, what did we do? What did I do today to prepare for this start? And then do another card. And then that morphed into, cause Donnie, you know, left, and now you're on your own. Now you got to figure out your own routine. And then that morphed into an audio recording that I had that actually Bob Tewksbury, who's another great sports psychologist.
Tewks is great too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, I mean, talk about guys you had at your disposal, Donnie Coxey and Bob Tewksbury, in my opinion, two of the best mental coaches in all of sports. Donnie's, I think, still with the Dallas Mavericks.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, but Tewks has also wrote a book, and that's amazing that you went from Donnie. Oh, hey, Tewks, how about you?
Yeah. So I went from Donnie when Donnie left to like a few years of like gray area, right? Like,
right.
what am I doing? Like, I'm still trying to do these on my own with my own deal and whatever. Well, then Tukes gets there in, I think, 13. And, bro, I'm struggling. Middle of the season, struggle bus in 13. And I'll never forget it. We're in Oakland, and I was pitching the next day. And I go, Tukes, man, I need, like, we got to do something. He's like, all right, meet me in the visiting clubhouse guy's office in, like, the third inning. So I go up there. He's like, hey, have you done visualization? And I said, not really, Tukes. I said, no, I try to visualize, but it doesn't get me anywhere. He's like, all right. So he walks me through this whole visualization thing, right? The going to sleep that night to waking up, eating breakfast, getting to the ballpark, the whole thing. And I would love to tell you I sat there and threw 9 shutout, but I didn't. I threw, I think, 6-3 runs. I got a no decision. But it was like I was out there and I was in it, like I was there. So from that point forward, he made me the audio recording, and he would do the same thing. It would be the same steps. You know, obviously he left out that we were pitching in Oakland and whatever. But I would throw, you know, 3 batters with nobody on, 3 batters with somebody on, and then kind of finish it with some positive words at the end. So my routine went from my cards, do that for, that takes about 8 minutes. And then I go and I would. Boston had a sleep room, so I'd go lay down in the sleep room. You end up taking about a 20 or 30 minute nap. Boom, wake up. You've got all this visualization in your mind. Now you're ready to you've almost thrown 2 innings before you even get out there. Right. So that was part of my routine from 13, literally the same audio recording from 13. I listened to it my last start in 2021, the exact same. Wow. So the day of about 2.5 hours before my start, I would do that.
Wow. Do you, yeah, Johnny, do you think that turned, like, your 2013 season definitely turned in the right direction, and then you had a great postseason? Would you attribute that right there to getting you where you needed?
100%. You know, like, it just, and also too, man, like, you know, it's the same thing in life. Like, you try something new and it works for you. It's like, okay, you know, like, I could have gone out and shit the bed and who knows, I may never have done it ever again. You know, right. What I mean? Like, but
right.
It necessarily for me wasn't the results as it was how present I felt in the game. Like, I felt like I had been in the situation before the situation happened. Mm. So I think that extra sense of being even more prepared, yeah. You know, not only physically, but I was mentally more prepared that night, you know, than in previous starts. So, yeah, I mean, from that point forward, I kind of took off, and then with that comes confidence, right? Like, you go out there and you're 2-1, and when you're not feeling well, that 2-1 gets hit really hard. When you're feeling well, you basically can go here and they pop it up, you know, right? Like, so it helped build kind of that confidence within, and I got on a little bit of a run that ended up kind of carrying over into the postseason. And I mean, that was pretty fun too. So
yeah. Well, I want to stay there. I want to stay there with the postseason, because I mean, that 2013 team, bro. Like, there were some, I don't know if degenerates the word or characters.
Characters are the nicer word.
Fits it perfectly.
Yeah, maybe, but yeah, there was like, Napoli, Gomes, Dempster, you know, even Pedroia at times. I mean, like, yeah. So many guys, there's so many characters. Maybe characters is the word that I'm looking for. Like, you know, just some awesome dudes that are some really good players. But it just seemed like, man, you guys just kept rolling. Rossi was on that team. Big Poppy doing his thing. Like, so many good people on that team that I, can you take us back to that run, dude? Like, especially the playoff run, when you guys got to the postseason, you know, what was that? What was it like being on that team? And am I correct saying there were some characters on the team?
Oh, beyond characters, man. Like, beyond. But like, so the crazy part about that season, so they make all these moves in the offseason, right? And you know, you're looking at it going, man, these are some great, great players kind of towards the end. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
We're bringing in veteran guys.
Lackey.
Yeah. Lackey, Victorino, Dempster, yes. You know, yes. All these guys. Right. And, you know, you're sitting there going, well, you know, if we can stay healthy, we should have a good team. Like, we should be competitive. And they're saying, oh, we'll be below 500. Right. Fast forward to spring training, dude. I remember the very first day that the full team was there. Johnny Gomes walks in, and as the door swings open, he goes, Well, boys, say hello to the 2013 World Series champs.
No way, dude.
Dude, this, you know Boston. Like, this is Boston.
Oh, yeah.
Like, everybody kind of looks around like, I don't think you can say that here. Like, what are you talking about? So him and Knapp and Pedroia and all these guys, man, just they start, like, bringing us together. Like, we start immediately in spring training, man. We had a tight-knit group. Down, right. All these guys. And, you know, we had a lot to prove, too. Like, the guys that were there in 12, you know, obviously the weird stuff that happened in 11 and you know, I still had stuff hanging over my head with all that.
Right.
And lack. And, you know, 12, we stunk. I mean, we were the worst team in baseball.
Is that
and,
is that Bobby V year?
Yeah, that was yeah, the yeah. Bobby V year. So
disaster.
We stunk then. And then, you know, now like coming in off a down year, like have a lot to prove and like all this stuff. Right. And so you have these characters come in and now all of a sudden stuff's fun. Like we were yeah. last place team and we're acting like we just won the World Series. You know? And so like, but like to go back to like Johnny, I remember Johnny being like, hey, you know, make sure you guys pick out your duck boats. Like make sure you get the right one that you want. Oh, and that started God. From day one, dude. And so you have this positive vibe immediately. Right. And then, obviously the Boston Marathon stuff happened, you
that's
know,
right. And, that's and, that year. That's
yeah.
Right.
And then that not only brings us closer, that brings the city closer. David gets, you know, on the mic and says what he says, which is incredible. And then, you know, we start getting on a run and we're playing well and we're vibing. And, you know, a personal story within that was like we were talking about when I was struggling. And this, I'll remember this until the day I die. And I told Riz this in 16. And Johnny, I was sitting there talking to Johnny. I'm like, dude, you face me a lot, man. Like, what? Help me. Like, why am I struggling? What am I doing? And so he tells me, we go through that whole thing. And at the end, he goes, hey, bro, listen. You realize everything's already been played out, right? Like everything in our destiny is already played out. All we have to do is sit back and push play and watch. I was like we're on the airplane, like flying somewhere. I don't remember where we were. And he tells me this. I mean, he just blew my mind. Like, hey man, listen, like you can't change what's going to happen. Right? Like, so stop trying to change something that you can't change. Go push play, show up and pitch. It's already happened. The game's already happened. You just got to do it. Wow. I'm like, damn, dude, like that
and really was that Lackey or was that John Farrell?
That was Johnny Gomes.
Johnny Gomes. Wow. Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
So he tells me that, man. And that like completely reset me, gave me a different feeling. You know, like when you're out there on the mountain, you're trying so damn hard. Like, hey, man, this has already happened. Like,
right.
If it's meant to be, it's meant to be. Like, let's go. And then you start attacking, and you start doing that. But then it started like from there, man. Like we started just. That's where I learned about being like a teammate, about caring for one another, about paying attention to the game, learning the game. Why did a manager make this decision? Why did he do this? And, you know, we had John Farrell was our manager. Torrey Lovello was our bench coach. And then we had seven other managers on the bench. You know, you had Rossi. You had Gomes.
That's right. Rossi. Rossi was on that team too. That's
yeah. Right. Yeah. And Dempster. Like you had all these older guys that have been around for so long. And like John would tell Torrey, like, hey, go tell this guy to do that. And Johnny Gomes would go to Torrey and go be like, no, we're not doing that. Like this is what we need to plan for. Whatever. Torrey would go back to John. John would be like, yeah, okay. And then we would do this. And then we would do that. And you know, whatever. It was just like, but there was no like there was no resentment from John Farrell doing that. You know what I mean? Like he understood where our team was and what we needed to do. And our guys understood what John Farrell was trying to do. And there's the line of communication. And it was just, so man, like we all got, like, it was just a group from day one that meshed, that played well together. And then at the end, we came out on top. And man, it's like the year that I always look to, when I talk about fun, when I talk about camaraderie, when I talk about like just the dudes, like you don't have to have the most talented team to win. We weren't the most talented team, but we had heart. We had guys that cared more. We had good veterans and we played our dicks off every day. You know what I mean? Like it was hell every single day the guys played and it was, I mean, this was back when you could slide into second.
Right.
And I remember, and not to, this isn't a bad mouth to Daniel Nava or anything, but
No.
He went into like, it was kind of one of those plays where he wasn't going to get to second, so he kind of just peeled off, you know? And he comes in the dugout, and Johnny Gomes walks down there, and he goes, if you don't throw that guy into the Green Monster next time, I'm throwing you into the Green Monster. You know, like one of those.
Yeah, like set the tone, yeah.
But, like, respect, like, it wasn't, like,
right.
degrading or anything like that. It was just, hey, man, we play a certain style of baseball here, and we understand that you weren't going to get there. Like, it was one of those, you know what I mean? Like, just the
right.
the easy double play, hit hard, whatever. Right. But it was just kind of the point of the matter of what – our guys tried to play every single day of this hard nose. We're in your face. We're coming at you, you know, style of baseball.
God, I love that team, dude. I was at all those games working for MLB Network and just, you know, watching you guys play. It just looked like, wow. For all the people that say chemistry doesn't matter, that's a bunch of bullshit. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, at the end of the day, chemistry does matter. The energy of a Johnny Gomes coming in and saying, all right, boys, get your duck boats. Let's go. Like, from day one. Like, that stuff matters. It matters because it's such a marathon. It's such a grind of a year, 162 games. And if you're going to postseason, it's 100, whatever, 80-some games. Dude, you got to have guys that are out there grinding, good players that that want to be there, that kind of love each other. And I, you know, that team for me was that.
Well, and it's not always going to be guys that you're friends with for the rest of your lives either.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, right. When you get 25 guys in a room, not everybody's going to like each other, regardless of how good, bad, or indifferent you are, right? Like, that's the nature of the world. Like, you're not all going to get along, but there's the respect and there's their effort. Like, I know I'm going to give you everything I have. Doesn't mean we're going to go get a beer after the game.
Right.
You know, like, you don't have to have that, but the chemistry on the field has to mean something.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, man, we may not all go out and get a beer after the game, but when we're at the field, when we're here to work, you're my brother, let's roll.
Yeah.
You know, like there's a difference in that, you know, and to the people that say that chemistry doesn't matter, they have never been in a clubhouse then. Like, it does matter.
It does matter. Exactly. Dude, when I think of that World Series, too, I think of one of the greatest hitting expeditions we've ever seen, what Big Poppy put on. Like, you could have thrown a BB up there, and he would have, bow, hit one, you know, 9,000 feet.
Yeah.
Two parts on that. Watching him do what he did in the 2013 World Series, you know, what was that like? And also, of all the years playing with Big Poppy, do you have a story that, you know, that still sits with you that maybe you tell your buddies?
Really, he hit that entire playoffs, you know, like it was, I mean, if you think about, like, we come in against the Tigers and the Tigers are supposed to steamroll us. And we lost 1-0 to Anibal Sanchez, who punched out like 16 in game one. And then game two, we're down, and, you know, Poppy is probably the only guy that I've ever seen in my career where the stadium stops when he comes out of the dugout just to go on deck, like not even to go hit yet. Like, people are watching him swing on deck. They're not even watching Pedroia, you know, like they don't care what he does. They're watching what David does. And he comes out, and I'll never forget it. It was me, Peavy, and Ross sitting on that little perch where Tito used to sit. And bases are loaded, or it wasn't bases loaded yet, but he comes up and he goes, if he brings in Benoit, it's the biggest mistake he's ever done. And he walks out on deck. I mean, we're like sitting here going, what? Like, what do you mean? And he tells it later. He would just sit on his changeup, and that's where he hit the homer off of him to the grand slam to, I think, either tie it or put us up. And that's the one where Torrey Hunter went over.
Torrey went over the fence. Yeah.
So, like, hits a grand slam, and when he went up to bat, Peavy sat there and goes, dude, if he hits a grand slam, we're winning the series. And sure, I mean, boom, hits a grand slam, we win the series, we move on. And then he, like, just carried that over into the World Series. Wow. And just put on an absolute display of hitting. But, I mean, I think the most famous story from David, and this is how awesome he is – the Pedroia forgetting, doesn't know his name, you know, story. I'm sure you're familiar with it.
Yeah, no, tell it.
And so I forgot who we were playing, and Pedroia was on deck or something. A play was made over by the on deck circle. Pedroia was standing there. David was standing there for some reason. And the catcher goes, Hey, Dustin, how you doing? And Dustin's like, good, man. How are you? And David comes up to him afterwards. He goes, hey, what did he call you? And Dustin kind of looks confused. Like, what are you talking about? He goes, what do you call you? He goes, we call me Dustin. And he goes, why do you call you that? And I mean, you guys know Petey. Yeah. And he looks at David. He goes, David, what the fuck's wrong with you? Nobody called me. That's my name. He goes, no, it's not. He goes, yes, my name is Dustin Pedroia. I've only had thousands of at-bats. I hit before you thousands of times. Now batting number 15, Dustin Pedroia. He goes, oh, shit, man. I thought your name was Pee-wee. Like, what? So 1 year. Hey, dude, 1 year. I don't know if it was the year you were there or not. But remember, like, he wouldn't wear his hat. And his hat would always sit in the dugout, like, on the top. On the
right. Thing.
And, you know, if you put your hat down or whatever, you're, like, flipping through hats. And I flipped through it one day. Mind you, his head's, like, that big.
He's got, like, a nine.
Yeah. On the bill of his hat was everybody's number and name.
Oh, wow. No way.
Yeah. I still don't think he knows my name. He always just called me Lesty. Oh, my God. So I think it was, like, a mix between Lester and Lefty.
Oh, my God. So great. Dude, it's funny you say that. Like, you know, just playing with, there were so many characters throughout Boston, but you know, it back to that, you know, he talked about having his hat up there and him having all the names of everybody and their numbers and stuff. So funny. It's totally a Poppy thing. I wanted to throw this story in there before we moved on from Boston. Was in 2008, it was like towards the end. I think I was on the DL at the time, and you, me, and Coco Chris were sitting in the dugout together. I don't know if you remember this story, but up to this point, bro, like my whole life, I'm like, I'm a baseball player. Like, I gotta be able to have a couple dips. I want to put some Levi Garrett in, some Copenhagen. Petey's putting in like peach skull and freaking just eating it. So I remember saying to you, Johnny, do you remember this story? I'm like, Johnny, and you and Coco Chris, I'm like, hey guys. Listen, I'm on the DL. I was like, my career's over in like 2 months. I want to put a dip in like Tito's guy. Looks so good. He's got the Levi Garrett. It's, you know, maybe a little clue in there. Who knows? Pulls it out. And he's got like a couple bazooka around him. Like, you know, and I said to you, Johnny, I go, Johnny, how long do I think I have if I put one of those in? He goes, Case, you got at least 4 innings. I'm like, all right, perfect. So, dude, you go over, you get the Levi Garrett. I get the gum. I'm chewing it up. I wrap it around, put it in there. I got a dip in, bro. It's you, me, and Coco. We're on the thing. Yeah, I think you guys might too. We're spitting in the dugout. About 4 minutes later, bro, freaking Green Monster looks like a freaking ride at the Six Flags. Just starts zipping. I'm like, holy shit. I'm like, I'm not making it 4 innings. I'm 4 minutes in, and I'm a big problem. So, like, I look at you. I look at Coco. I'm like, bro, guys, I'm done. I'm 4 innings. No chance. I'm 4 minutes in. This is why I'm 0-for-8, 8 pukes in my life. I just can't do this. It doesn't matter. So I remember throwing it out, and you're like, all right, Case, just get it out of your mouth. You know, I'm underneath the thing. I'm just eating the water cooler, right? And about an inning later, Johnny, I'm like, man, I don't feel good. So I go up to the clubhouse. I'm like, I gotta lay down. Well, I go up there and Bartolo Colon's watching Telemundo soap operas. And I remember Bart's like got an ice pack on. I don't even think he pitched, but I'm like, Bart, you mind if I lay down with you? He's like, oh, no problem, here, Mono. So next thing you know, I'm laying down on Bartolo Colon. The room is still spinning. I have my head down. I'm watching Telemundo soap operas for the rest of the game. It was the only game in my whole career that I wasn't out there. We won the game, and I remember everyone coming up, and I was the only time in my career where I was in the clubhouse to high five. So you and Coco were wrong. It wasn't 4 innings. It was 4 minutes.
I overestimated you.
You overestimated me, exactly. Overestimated. Oh, my God. So good, dude. So Johnny, you win the World Series again in Boston, 2007, 2013. You're an icon there forever. You come up and through that system. In 2015, you have to make one of the toughest decisions of your life as a free agent, is to go back to Boston or to go to Chicago, where you did. What made you go to the Chicago Cubs in 2015?
Man, I think a lot of things. You know, the lore of Theo talking about breaking that curse, you know, winning a World Series there, doing that. And it just like kept, I would, like, people would ask me like, well, what are you thinking? I'm like, I don't know. It's between this and this. And they're like, well, what do you feel? I'm like, I don't know. That keeps like coming up in my head. You know, like I thought that would be really cool. Like not to take anything away from Boston and anything there, but it's like, I've accomplished a lot there. You know, you get traded away, you realize, hey, you can play baseball in other places. You know, like you think,
right.
You get to free agency. It's like, oh man, the only place I can play is Boston. I don't know if I can do this anywhere else. And go to Oakland and play there and whatnot. So you kind of realize like, hey, it's the same game. So I think that helped, you know, knowing, I think looking back on it, if Theo and those guys aren't in Chicago, I'm probably a back. If Theo's somewhere else and is irrelevant to the conversation, I think I end up back in Boston.
Boston. Yeah.
Just the having that comfortable relationship with those guys. And like, there was a lot of guys over there from the Red Sox, and I didn't feel like I was really leaving. I was just kind of like going somewhere with this group that was in Boston. You know what I mean?
Right. Right.
But I think at the end of the day, I think it was just that World Series. I think that lore of trying to break that, because I was part of the Red Sox organization, but I was nowhere close to the big leagues when they won it in 04. And like to see those guys, you know, not to discredit anybody's career, but you like Dave Roberts stole that base, right?
They're legends. Like, they're legends forever.
Legends forever.
Yeah.
You know, like Kevin Millar, legend forever. Like anybody on that team is a legend forever, no matter right. what. Right. So like that stuff like was in the back of my mind all the time. Was not an easy decision. I mean, it came down to a lot more options at the end, you know, kind of when things kind of hit the fan at the end. You know, I had the Giants and the Dodgers came in late. And then you got, you know, your where you feel comfortable, home, second home, pulling at your heartstrings over here. You know, so it was really, really tough. I think the hardest part for me was calling David and calling Pedroia and telling those guys that, you know, I wasn't coming back. You know, that was like the two hardest conversations I had to have, you know, like that was really tough for me.
What do you remember what their reaction was?
You know, like obviously an emotional night for me, and I call Pedroia and he answers. I called David and he didn't. I left him a message and you know, I kind of held it together on that because I think just leaving the message helped. But as soon as Pedroia, you know, answered, you know, I felt like I let him down. You know, like I felt like, you know, he's my brother. I've known him for so long. We came up together. We were supposed to be Red Sox for life together. You know, like that's what we wanted to do. And I wanted to be a part of that organization forever. And first thing out of my mouth was, I'm sorry, bro. Like I'm not coming back. And, you know, I lost it. And, you know, he's basically trying to talk me off a cliff, you know, to get me back to neutral. But no, man, he was great about it. He's like, man, you gotta, it's your decision. Like you earn that right to make that decision, and there's no hard feelings or anything. And, you know, of course at the end, he's like, if I ever face you, I'm taking you deep. So just remember that. You know, so
as part of the conversation. Did you ever face him?
No.
Oh, man.
We played the Red Sox once. We came back in 17 in Interleague. We came back to Boston, and I had pitched the day before we went.
Oh, my gosh.
So it actually was good. I'm not going to lie. I was actually happy that it worked out that way, because I don't know how that start would have gone.
Yeah, right. That would have been tough.
Yeah. So, but yeah, man, it looking back on it, it was a easy, hard decision. You know, like it was one of those things at the end of the day, you know, obviously we can always look back on something and say, hey, it worked out, it didn't work out, and then base it off of that. But
it works out how it's supposed to work out, right? That's art, the script's written, like Johnny Gomes said back in the day.
And, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. Exactly.
I just remember when you signed there, Johnny, I remember, I love the press conference. You're like, listen, the goal is to win the World Series. You know, I remember, and I remember watching that going, I remember I was telling a buddy of mine at the time, I go, that guy right there is a big reason that he's serious. Like, he's not coming to Chicago because it's fun. You know, at the end of the day, he's coming to Chicago to not only to break a curse, but to win a world championship for that, you know, for that city. So, you know, for you, brother, like, coming there, and in the second year in Chicago, you know, you guys end up winning the whole thing. Can you take us back to that year, man? And like, just I know it was a special year. You know, you had a lot of young guys in that team with the Rizzos and the Bryants and the Baez. You and Lackey were kind of you're kind of the you know the veteran guys on that club. Can you just take us back to, like, you know, being more of a team, the big team leader now on those Cubs teams?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it, like you said, it started in 15, you know, it starts with a mindset, right? Like, and I didn't know any different coming from the Red Sox. You're expected to win every year. So like, I don't care what your team looks like on paper. Like, you got to go win. You got to figure out a way to win, right? Like, I'm not, and that was what Theo tried to be like, hey, we're going to bring these guys along. We're going to do this. And, you know, whatever. I'm like, well, what if we're in it at the deadline? What are you going to do then? You know, like, are you going to, well, no, our plan's not really supposed to work until 16. I'm like, no, dude, like, hey, listen, like, we, and sure shit, we show up and we start steamrolling people, right? Like, Jake Arrieta goes out and has one of the best years in the history of the game.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we call up Bryant. Unfortunately, it ended up working out to our favor because, you know, Mike Olt got hurt. Unfortunately, you don't ever want somebody to get called up because somebody gets hurt. But he goes down, breaks a hand. Now here's KB. He's our third baseman. We're ready to roll, right? Now, you know, we're playing, and it becomes like, hey guys, we're supposed to win. You're supposed to win. You're supposed to beat the Cardinals. I don't care what they look like on, you're like, let's go, let's keep going. And the Dexter Fowlers, the Miggy Monteros, the David Rosses, you know, the guys that we had that were older that had been around really helped these young guys, like, hey, start believing. And I think the turning point of what happened in 16 is we beat the Cardinals in the first round, the DS, in 15. Because I think what that did is that eliminated a lot of doubt of, well, the Cardinals are always going to be ahead of us. You know, like, they're the Cardinals, they're the franchise, they have all the wins, they have all this. Where we beat them in 15, they had 101 wins. You know, and we stunned them, and we ran out of some steam. But I think us beating them that series right there set us up for 16. And then now you've got KB, who's got almost a full year. You've got, you know, these younger Schwarber. You've got,
that's right,
Baez. You've got guys that have experience now, to where when they roll into 16, it's not new. They're not learning. They're learning, but they're more of, I've been here, I'm playing, now let's go.
Right.
And then 16, man, was just like the belief of what we talked about, what Johnny said of, hey, y'all pick out your duck boats. Hey, welcome to the 2016 World Series champ clubhouse, you know, like stuff like that. Like, you got to talk positive. And another thing that Johnny said that I'll never forget in 13 was he goes, yeah, do I have a routine when I hit? I do. I have a routine. But at the end of the day, I want to practice hitting home runs because I want to hit home runs. You know, like, I'm not working on hitting a ball to the second baseman. Like, what am I teaching myself there? You know, like, yes, there's some fundamental things, 100%. There's a time and a place for that. But when I'm in the batting cage, I'm trying to hit home runs because I want to practice what I want to do. So if you talk about what you want to do, then when the situation arises, you're not nervous. You've done it. You've talked about it. You've lived it. And so you get to that point of your belief is so strong that now, like we talked about, push play, and now we're good. Now we go.
Yeah. When you look at that team in 2016, it just seemed like, yeah, it seemed like 15 gave you guys confidence, and then 16, you're like, okay, we're here to win this whole thing. Is there a moment in the postseason that you look back on before we get to Game 7? Is there a moment in that postseason where you're like, wow, we're over the hump, or this is a team we're going to win it this year?
I thought 15 was that. You know, I thought if we could stay healthy with the same guys that we had in 15 that got us to that point. You know, obviously, you know, you take guys years, right? Like, you take a guy like Jake Arrieta, who had, like we just talked about, an historic run.
Right.
You can't expect that in 16, right? Like, but if his regression is still good or great,
he's one of the
best.
We're still
in a great spot, right? Which it was. He pitched really well for us that year. Same thing with Lack. Same thing with the back end of our bullpen. And then you make a trade for Chapman. You know, getting into the division series, that was a tough series because you got the Giants coming in. You got Cueto going game one. And we go back and forth in that. And some crazy stuff happened in game four out there that we end up coming back and winning. I think that win right there coming back in a playoff situation really gave our young guys confidence. You know, like, we came out here to close this out. We were down, but we didn't give up, and we won, and now we clinch and move on to the CS. We go back home, you know, like, so I think that was a big – I think every step was confidence, right? I think, guys, we got beat by the Mets in 15, and I think guys still left there with confidence, even though we got it handed to us pretty good that series. But guys still left with confidence, like, hey, we were right there. Right. You know, we were right there. And then, you know, 16, I think winning that game in San Fran at San Fran to not force a game five, that was huge for us, big time. And then the Dodgers is just, I mean, it's a heavyweight boxing match, you know, like you gotta try to figure out a way not to make any mistakes, or hope they make more is kind of what it, you know, comes down to. Big play in that series. I don't remember what game it was. It might've been game four.
Right.
I think it was Ben Zobrist laid down a bunt for a hit. We had been struggling, laid down a bunt for a hit. He gets a knock and it's like floodgates open. You know what I mean? Like, guys,
yeah.
It was like, okay, we got a hit, you know, like one of those. And then it was just like rockets everywhere after that, you know. That was a big thing in that series there. But man, I mean,
in the World Series, were you guys down 3-1 in that World Series? 3-1 in that World Series. What was that like, being down 3-1 in that World Series? I mean, what was it like in the clubhouse? Were you guys like, you know, what were you saying to each other?
Man, I think, you know, one thing that I remember hearing Millar talk about, just watching stuff, you know, baseball junkie, like watching all this stuff and seeing all the replays of the 04, you know, things and what he had to say. Game five, well, obviously game five is such a big game in that series because we're down 3-1. Obviously we lose, we go home, hang our heads, all that. But to go out and win that game right there, all I could think about was just get to game seven.
Right.
You know, like, win game five, you know, not to put the horse before the cart there. Like, you know, we talked about the number thing earlier. Like, you still have to win game six, right? You don't win game six, you don't get to game seven.
Right.
But we win game five, and I felt like we had this huge boost of confidence. Now, we went at home in front of our home crowd. We're going to Cleveland. We got Arrieta starting game six. And I just kept thinking during game six, like, just get to game seven. Because Millar said it. He's like, we got Pedro tonight, Schilling tomorrow, and then anything can happen game seven.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So that's what I kept thinking about, is like, win game five. We got Arrieta going game six. And then anything can happen game seven, right? Like, so that was kind of my mindset. I don't know if I ever said that out loud to anybody. But I know guys had confidence, you know, going into that game five. I mean, it was, I feel like we played really well. We had some, you know, a little bad luck here, a little bad luck there, whatever. That's baseball. But I feel like, you know, two of those games could have gone either way for us.
Right.
And so I still feel like guys had confidence, and we go out and win game five, a great game. Chapman gets what? Eight outs.
I was going to say, like, it comes in like the fourth.
Yeah. I mean, something stupid. Well, so I go six, give up two. We're up 3-2 in the sixth. And then we try to mismatch in the seventh. And I think only get one out in the seventh. And Chapman comes in and goes, is that right?
Like, I think so.
But, Jeez, I'm pulling it up now. Yeah, I think you're pretty much done.
And then shoves, and then it's like, okay, we're good. Like, I mean, how does that happen? Chapman, I mean, he's going back to his starter days. He gets eight outs, and now that sets us up for game six. Now we get a day off with, you know, resetting our bullpen, giving Jake the ball, and then we come out like gangbusters in the sixth with our offense and give us, you know, a nice little boost there. To lead us into the historic game seven.
Two things in game seven. First off, for you, bro, I was there, you know, sitting right behind the dish. We had some of the best seats ever. That's when I was with, like, Chelly. I was with, like, the who's who of Cubs fans. It was, like, Vetter, Chelios, John Cusack. Theo was there for a little bit. I was like, what's Theo doing here? He's like, hey, it's game seven. I'm like, shouldn't you be up in the box with Jed just stressed to the gills? You know what I mean? You know? But we were watching that game. But for you, man, coming out of the bullpen, right? In games, you came out of the bullpen in game seven, right? And, yeah. And dude, what was that like for you to come out of the pen, you know, you're a starter, you're used to that routine. You know, what was it like coming out in game seven to come out and do what you did?
Oh, crazy. I mean, I think the hardest part, man, and I tell people this all the time, the hardest part isn't necessarily pitching. The hardest part is not pitching, you know? So when you're down there in that environment, which gave me a whole nother understanding of what those guys go through on a nightly basis, you know, right. Like they're like the offensive line of football. Like they get no credit for what they do and they do it every single day, you know? So that gave me an appreciation for what they do. But like when you don't have control over what's going on, then your emotions are allowed to run everywhere, right? So you're down there. Then it becomes, like you said, the routine aspect. And luckily I had Travis Wood down there. Rossi came down there to warm me up at first. And then they sat me down and Rossi went to the dugout. And now it's like a guessing game of how I need to get ready again. I got Travis standing in front of me to where I couldn't throw anymore. You know, like you got all these things going on. And then, you know, as you know, Case, in baseball, nothing's scripted, right? Like you can have a game plan, but that goes out the window as soon as that first pitch is thrown. Right. You know, so I was supposed to come in with just a clean inning. You know, a reliever was supposed to go in if somebody was on, and then I would come in the next inning. But like Joe said, I mean, my clock to get in the game had started ticking early, like earlier than expected, because he had gotten me up. So then it became either we do it now or we don't. Like that's where it was.
Right.
And he made the decision with Santana on. And I think, you know, that's a hard part, right? Like you're used to as a starter coming in first pitch of the game. Here we go. Let's see what happens. Nobody's on, nobody out. Oh, you know, here we go. Right. And I understood the move too. We had Kipnis up lefty on lefty. I had decent numbers against him. So I understood the move at that particular time. And then shit hits the fan. You know, Kipnis hits a little dribbler. You know, Rossi's into the game. So now he's got to get his feet wet into the game with somebody on and this guy up. We got two outs. And he fires a ball down the line. Now we got second and third with Lindor up. Oh my God. And, you know, we go over all this report stuff. You know, I faced Lindor how many times during the series already? So I got an idea. And you know, one of them is, you know, if you're throwing him a curveball, it's got to be down. He'll chase it, but it's got to be down. So I'm thinking with two guys on, two outs, I'm not hanging this thing. Well, I throw it. It bounces 10 feet in front of home plate.
Rossi almost, scrambling.
Yeah. Almost kills Rossi. Almost gives him his 19th concussion. He's running all over the field looking for the ball. Here comes Kipnis. Kipnis scores. Now the place is going freaking crazy. They're down two. Like that. I've thrown four pitches or something, you know, like, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
So now you got to figure anyway, we get out of the inning and now you can kind of settle. Now you're back to, you're in the windup. You're more. Luckily Rossi wasn't concussed and hit a homer the next inning. It was up 6-3.
That's right. Know? Homers.
Yeah. He hit the homer off Andrew Miller to dead center. And now we're back up 6-3. So now it's like, okay, we're back to, we were down, or we were up four. Now we're back to three at least. We got a little room, you know, and then we were able to kind of just settle in, you know, from that point. We had a really good plan against those guys. They kind of showed me their plan game one, and it backfired on me. I couldn't locate a way to them in game one, and they were just giving me away and just looking in. And you know, it got me in game one. I walked a few guys, had a few long at bats and stuff like that. And then game two or game five, we were able to change it. And then obviously game seven, able to kind of mix and match that report from there, from, you know, from that 50, point on.
55 pitches in that game there for you.
Yeah. Was two and two thirds?
Yeah, they gave you three here. Three.
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Dude, so what did you think when Rajay Davis hit the three-run homer off Aroldis?
Oh, man. So I'm in the dugout, and, you know, they had just taken me out, and my run scores. I gave up a CNI ground ball hit to Jose Ramirez up the middle. Addy tried to make an unbelievable play, couldn't do it. Anyway, they pull me for Chap, put Chap in to face Brandon Guyer. Guyer hits a ball in the gap, my run scores. So I can leave the premise now. I can go into the clubhouse. So I go in there and kind of taking a breather, sitting there for a minute, and some other stuff goes on. And then now, you know, Rajay's up. I haven't taken anything off. I got all my stuff on still. Mind you, they've got all the tarps, everything up. World Series champion, everything's up.
What?
Everything's up.
Oh, yeah. My God.
Yeah. So.
Are you a little bit like, get this shit down?
I was at first when I walked in, but I didn't want to say anything. You know, I didn't want to jinx any more of the jinx. You know what I mean?
Right.
I didn't want to address
pretend
the elephant.
Pretend like you didn't see it. Yeah, yeah, right.
Yeah. So I'm sitting there, and, you know, the Rajay Davis bat is going and going and going. And so I start taking my shoes off. I'm like, okay, what? Like, just don't watch. And another foul ball. And then all of a sudden, clips it, homer. And we're all sitting around like,
oh my God.
And the clubhouse guy, Willie.
Oh, yeah.
Is standing in the middle of the clubhouse. And I take my shoe off and fire it into one of the other lockers. I'm like, you better get all of this shit down immediately. And you would have thought people were coming out from under the ground. Like, there's people that just appeared out of nowhere ripping this shit down, right? Just pulling it all down. I'm like, get the champagne out of here. Get the beer out of here. Everything out. So they get it out. And we're all like looking around. What just happened? Well, the crazy part, like, people forget this. Chap gets out of that inning. They think that was the bottom of the eighth. Chap gets out of that inning and then comes out and fires a 1-2-3 in the ninth.
Oh, wow. That's right.
Right? Like, that's what people forget. They forget that he fired the 1-2-3 in the ninth, which is, I think, the biggest inning of the game. Right? We're tied, home, game seven, just gave up the tying home run. Like, Chappie, in my book, is one of the baddest human beings I've ever met. And then we had the infamous rain delay, which was, I think, good for our team, obviously.
Yeah.
Because I forgot who said it, but somebody said it where they were like, you know, it's like a fighter getting stunned, right? Like, you're kind of stunned, and then you get that bell to ring. Like, oh, okay, I can go sit.
Right.
And regroup.
Get my wits about me.
Yeah, I'm not on the clock. I'm not, you know, a ref isn't standing there telling me, you know, are you good or whatever. Now we came inside. It was just players. We all sat inside together. We talked about it. We got it off our chest. And it was like, all right, 0-0 when we get out of here. And it was funny. So Schwarber's a rookie. And he came off of ACL surgery. Shouldn't even been,
that's right.
I mean, right. More than ACL, like right knee reconstruction or left knee, whichever one it was. And he goes, we're walking out the door. He goes to somebody. I forgot who was hitting after him. He goes, after I get this knock, or no, they were going to pinch run for him. He goes, after I get this knock, you better steal second base. And goes out there and hits a rocket to right. And he's standing on first. They pinch run. And then we end up, you know, Zoe gets that big knock down the line, you know, to take the lead. And then we made it interesting in the, what was it, the 10th, but ended up pulling it out.
What was, like Johnny, that meeting, was that when everyone got together, was it a quick meeting? Was it something that like needed to happen kind of thing?
It needed to happen. And it wasn't like people always, you know, they always ask, well, you know, is it, you know, were you guys talking about the manager? Like, no, it had nothing to do with anybody other than ourselves. Like I said, it was like a regrouping. It was a, hey, yeah. We're good. Breathe. We're fine.
Right.
Let's go. It's 0-0. 0-0. Let's go. Like, you know, and it happened in the after the bottom. So like we were coming out now swinging as opposed to going on the on defense. You know, I think it'd be a different situation if we were playing defense there.
Right.
You know, but we were going out on the offensive, and guys just were like kind of like a regroup, just a reset. I mean, dude, we're riding all the emotions that the Cubs fans are riding, you know, with us, you know? So it's like we're all in it together, and we just had to take that breather.
Yeah.
You know, and the rain was perfect for that for us, and you know, it ended up working out on our end.
So when Bryant makes that play, gets the ball, obviously it looked like his butthole went like, you know, he was like, he was holding it. He's like, grenade. He like just shot, put it over to Rizzo. Bam. It's the third out. Like, where were you? What did that feel like? All that.
So, man, so I come back out. And like I told you, man, it's better to pitch than it is to sit. Right. Like, so I'm in the dugout, and Borzy is our report guy, our pitching report guy. And so anytime, you know, now we started having like these mixed, this was before they changed the three batter or changed it to the three batter or whatever. So we had all these mixed matchups, right? So we'd bring in a pitcher, they'd pinch hit somebody. I'm like, all right, what do we got? Like, what are we going to do to this guy? You know? So I'm like trying to be in it, and I'm pacing just up and down the dugout, up and down the dugout. And like, I'll stop, watch a pitch, and then just keep pacing. And so we get like two quick outs, and then, you know, we can't like really get it closed and all this stuff. Well, we bring in Montgomery, I think.
Yeah. And went Edwards to Montgomery.
Okay. Edwards to Montgomery, and they pinch hit Martinez. Is it Martinez? They pitch hit a switch hitter who was hitting right-handed.
Michael Martinez, right field. Does that Coco oh. Crisp pinch hit? Martinez pinch hit for Coco. Does that make sense there?
Yeah, because I think Coco was stronger left-handed than right-handed at that time. Right. So they wanted the Martinez. So like they bring this kid in, and I'm like, well, I didn't see him on my report. Where's this, like, where's this guy at? Like, I don't remember seeing a Martinez. So I go over to Borzy, and he's like, hey, we're good. We got and Monty's got a great curveball, like overhand, like one of the better, you know, analytical curveballs in the game. And he looks at me, he goes, don't worry, we got spin. We have spin. And I was like, okay. So I start pacing back and forth. Dude, the eight pitches seemed like it took like 3 years for him to warm up. And sure enough, he throws him a curveball. You know, he tops it. KB makes the play. And all I remember running out there, like I looked down at the steps. I'm like, don't be the asshole that trips, you know, like don't be that guy. And right. Then who am I going to jump on? Like who am I pile driving right now into the ground when I land on him? Like, that's all I was thinking about. But no, man, it was like,
who did you jump on?
I don't even know. It was like right in the middle of the pile.
You're just blacked out at that point, probably too. Yeah,
I'm not the swiftest of foot. So I was like 10th guy to get there to get on. Right. So it was, you know, but, I just remember like the biggest thing for me was like relief, you know, like you sign somewhere to do this, and we did it year two. And so it was like, we did it. You know, like now it's how many more can we try to win?
Right.
You know, because that first one is so hard. And we did it. And, you know, from that point, then it was just like, okay, how good can we get?
Right. Dude, what was that parade like? There were so many freaking people. I've never seen a sea of people in Chicago. I think it's one of the biggest gathering of people in the history of the world. What was that like?
You didn't really realize it when you were on the duck on the boat deals, you know, driving down the streets, because, you know, you'd get on whatever street went at Michigan Ave or whatever, and then you would look down and there'd be people down, you know, that road. Right. And then you'd get to the next and be down. So you're like, they're broken up so much. But when we got to that park and you like you got up on stage and you looked up and it was just like people. You know, like it was crazy. And then they're like, oh, hey, by the way, you haven't slept. You're on beer number like 87 for the day.
Right.
You know, like, oh, by the way, you got to go talk in front of all these people. And you're like, uh-huh. What? Yeah. Like, well, what am I supposed to say? They're like, I don't know. Just talk about stuff. I'm like, oh, okay. And I got up there and just like completely blanked out. And I was like, how about this shit? Looking around. Like, yeah. Nice one, John. Nice one. Really, really nailed that one.
Oh my God, dude, that's unbelievable.
So,
oh my God, dude. Well, you know, I think also too, like you talked about the 04 Boston team, that 2016 team in Chicago. Like, if you think back at the history of the game of baseball, 150 plus years, you got to look back and go, yeah, 2004, 2016. Those teams will be remembered forever, forever. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I mean, it's so cool to be a part of it. You know, I mean, like I think the best part about the whole thing, and I'm sure a lot of the Red Sox guys got the same stories, was just like, you know, you run into the fans and they're like, my, you know, 87-year-old grandpa got to see you guys do this, you know, before he passed away, you know, right. Or, you know, like my dad passed away at this age and I went and sat at his, you know, gravestone with him and shared and listened to the radio and listened to the call and, you know, had a beer with him at the grave. You know what I mean? Like this, those like awesome, just fan through and through stories, I think are what make that even more special, is you got to like, not only fulfill your dream, right? Like what you came there to do, but
right.
You fulfilled it for so many lifelong Chicago Cubs fans.
Right.
That it like makes it that much better.
That's so cool, man. That is so, so cool, bro. Gosh. The last thing we do, Johnny, we do this really quick thing, 9 and 90. Chinch asks a couple quick questions. I'll answer first, you answer last, and then bam, we're rolling.
Okay.
All right, okay, cool. Thank you, brother.
Go ahead, make it real quick. Looks like somebody wants to play ball back there. It'll be quick.
Yeah. Is that Walker? Walker. Yeah. Walker's like, all right, Dad, enough of the interview. Enough. I got the ball ready to go. Let's go work on the cutter, sinker.
That's first right.
Cross. Yeah.
Hall of Fame baseball broadcaster Marty Brenneman here. It's time for 9 in 90, the most ridiculous segment in all of sports.
All right, so real quick, Case, you ready? First one, more annoying, bee stings or mosquito bites?
Oh, I hate mosquitoes. Bees, I kind of like. You can't do without the honey, but the mosquitoes, I can't stand those things.
I'm with you, same.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Okay, you can only drink one of these Gatorade flavors for the rest of your life. Orange, red, or blue?
I'm going to have to go with the orange flavor.
Man. Yeah, orange is the best one.
I agree with that one,
too. Yes.
Okay, all right, Case, I didn't even know the military background before this one, but Sean, if you were going to go into the military right now, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, what would you rather do?
I'd like to be a Navy SEAL. I don't think I could cut it. I think I'd ring the bell on the second day, but Navy, I think.
I don't know which branch more, the Air Force, or I would want to do like the Marines flying on the aircraft carrier, like,
all right,
like
Top Gun style,
the cool jet thing.
Yeah,
all right,
cool.
I think Top Gun, nice. Like that deal.
There you go. Great. All right, this is a tough one. Chicago hot dogs, Case, or New England lobster rolls? You can only have one.
You know what? I just the New England lobster roll is so good that I've never had a better one, so I go there. New England lobster roll.
This probably isn't going to go over well, but I think I'm the same. I'm not a huge hot dog guy, so the lobster rolls during the summertime,
so refreshing,
you know, with a little cold beverage on the side, mm-hmm. is
delicious.
Pretty delicious.
Yeah. Super tough one here. More iconic baseball image: the Green Monster or the Wrigley Ivy?
Oh, wow. You know what? I don't know. For me, the Monsters, obviously the Ivy, but the Monsters, just something special as a player. It's just crazy when you're up at bat there. You're like, look at how big that freaking wall is.
I don't know. Can we do the Monster with the Ivy?
Yeah, we can put. You get a pass. You don't even have to answer that. We don't want you pissing off half of the fan base that loves you so much. So you pass on that one.
Johnny gets the Ivy on the Monster.
Yeah, there you
That's
go.
That's what it is.
Just like put the Ivy in like one of the corners so you get the Ivy.
Yeah, there you go.
With the Monster.
Okay, ballpark you hated playing in the most. Just a couple more.
Ballpark I hated. You know what? Old Candlestick for me, like before they had the new park, I just felt like it would go up and the wind would, I'm like guaranteed in one error of the 3-game series, I'm like, I'm going to make an error, ball's going to hit off my face, or I'm going to freaking miss the pop-up because the wind's swirling so bad.
Oh, man. I don't necessarily know about the ballpark, but the old Ranger Stadium ballpark at Arlington, that bullpen, it was 7 feet from hell. That's how hot it was.
That was so hot there.
So hot. But like when you got out there on the mound, it was a great stadium. Like it was awesome, but the bullpen stunk.
7 feet from hell.
Oh.
Right. Like Satan's right around the corner, guys. If you go 7 more feet that way.
He had to have been.
All right, last one right here. Sean Casey goes out and gets 4 at bats against John Lester today, right now, when neither of you guys have done anything in a while. Any hits, Sean?
I don't know. You know what? Against Johnny, I think maybe I could fillet one to left still at some point. Maybe 1 for 4, fillet over the third baseman's head, maybe.
I was actually going to give you one better. I was going to go 2 for 4.
Wow.
Because he stays inside the ball to left, and I hated lefties that did that. I wanted you to pull off and try to hit homers.
There you go.
Well, I think I might pull off now, Johnny. You know what I mean? I don't know what the hell I'm doing now.
Well, I don't know where the ball's going anyway. So it doesn't matter. I'm out here trying to throw wiffle balls and pulling them off my kid's head and over here off the slide. Oh, God, the wiffle ball game is not up to par right
now. Dude, it's not as easy as it looks. When you don't have that adrenaline or game plan, you don't know where the hell that wiffle ball's going. You know what I mean?
No. I'm going to start game planning for my kid's wiffle ball in the backyard. Down and away, up and in.
That's so
slider
great,
underneath.
Oh my God, Johnny, this has been so great, bro. Thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with Chinch and us, man. It's such great stories, and please tell Farah and the kids I said hi, brother, and I look forward to seeing you here soon down the road, man.
Yeah, man, thank you. Yeah, this has been awesome. I've enjoyed it.
Yeah, absolutely awesome, and appreciate your time. You know, I know you got not a ton going on, but we see there's 3 kids in the background. Like, let's go get this freaking interview over so we can play some games. Let's go.
Yeah.
All right, brother. Thanks, Johnny.
And grilling some ribs. So
I'll brother.
Talk to y'all later.
All right, man. Thanks, Johnny. See you, my man. I'll talk to you soon. Thanks, brother. Okay, man. Bro. That's awesome.
So great. so great.
Dude, to hear the stories, because he's such an iconic, he's such an iconic player with 2 iconic organizations, wins it all with the Red Sox twice, and then breaks the curse with the Cubs in 16. Just to hear the stories, go inside, I don't know, man.
Oh, dude.
It's so freaking cool. It's so cool.
First of all, you can see, I always thought he was like the toughest pitcher on the mound. Just watching as a fan and broadcasting, I'm like, he just looks so tough. And you can see that right there that he is so tough, but he's so obviously so intelligent and such a team leader guy. Like, you couldn't do better than John Lester in the last 15 years.
I think he's one of the toughest guys that ever played the game. I really do. Like, there's you saw it with his mom and dad. There's some toughness growing up in the Lester household. There was some toughness there, you know. So
yeah, speaking of toughness, getting off of cancer treatment and going, all right, let me start making my schedule so I can make my first start in like 4 months. That's about as tough as a human being gets.
Exactly, dude. Exactly. This guy's one of the best teammates you'll ever have.
Could see that.
Really cares about the guys. And, you know, to a man, if you asked any guy that ever played with John Lester, you know, they would say one of the best teammates I've ever had.
Yeah, it's like any team he played on, he is like at the top of the fraternity.
Cool. I forgot to say it, but the no-hitter, I forgot to tell that.
Call him back. Call him back, man.
he threw a no-hitter in 2008.
That's right.
And he got a ticket stub and John Lester's no-hitter, and he signed it. What did he sign it? Oh, he said 2 L.O. Call. They called me L.O. Call Day in Boston, the mayor.
What?
L.O. Call Day is the mayor in Spanish.
Oh, I was like, what?
So they put 2 L.O. Call Day. Thanks for being the mayor, John Lester. He gave that to every guy, though. And I have a golf ball downstairs. He signed a golf ball for everybody.
That's
no hitter.
So cool,
I think it was May 14th. But how cool is that, dude?
It's really cool.
Just one of those guys, bro. It's one of those guys you're so glad you played with him one time.
Oh,
to look back and be like, man, all the teammates you've had here and there, boy, so glad I got to play with Lester in 2008.
Yeah, I'm just, so glad to do that interview just now. What a great guy.
Me too, bro.
Love him.
So good, man. So good, Chinch.
On a roll, man.
But okay, man. Awesome, brother. Awesome job today again, man. Yeah. Everyone out there, continue. If you like what we're doing, leave us a review, subscribe to us, download, and check us out on YouTube if you want it visually. If not, wherever you get your podcasts, come check us out. But Chinch, I love you, brother, and I'll see you Friday, my man.
See
you. Okay, buddy.